Are you ready to advance your career, hone your skills, or explore new vocational paths without spending thousands of dollars to further your education? Skillfeed.com features over 65,000 video tutorials to keep your creative and technical skills current. Choose from long courses or short tutorials called Skill Snacks, featuring courses on business, web development, education, finance, leadership, photography, and more. Get your 30-day free trial now. Log on to skillfeed.com/radio. That's skillfeed.com/radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome once again to the PRS Table. I'm one of your hosts, Brother Dunlap, and we just are so grateful that you decided to take the time out of your schedule to sit down at the table with us. Brother Feast and Sister Sanders, I just had to let this play for a little while longer because we're really going to be talking about money tonight, and I'm so grateful for one of our callers last week that really sparked something in us to really deal with the topic that we're going to be dealing with tonight. So tonight we're going to be dealing with a topic of where's your money going? And I thought about that long and hard about where's your money going, where is the money going, and what are we going to do to actually talk about it, how are we going to do it? I really don't know, but we know that God has always been so gracious to allow us to do how we've been doing for over a year now. So we thank God for the opportunity. So let me go to one of the trio of the hosts. Let's go to Brother Feaster. How you doing this evening, and what you got for us early in the show, bro?
Well, I am excited to be here. I am glad to be here. And as always, I am ready, willing, and able. I think this is another lesson, another text, another session that I just feel like it's going to hit home. It's going to get hit hard. I'm kind of, it's like taking that nervous step forward. You know you got to take that step forward, but you don't know what to expect. So I'm kind of excited tonight. So let's see where this is going. Let's see where it's going.
Hey, bro, can you just tell us what Mom said last week?
Oh, yeah. My mom called me, and she normally gives me the, hey, baby, how you doing, da, 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 da. But as soon as she get on the phone, she went straight to y'all was doing some heavy hitting last week. And I was like, huh? Y'all was doing some heavy hitting last week. I said, Mom, what are you talking about? On the show, I wanted to make some comments. Y'all was hitting heavy last week, and I was just taking notes and listening. So that was the beginning of our conversation that we had a couple of days ago.
Wow, amen. You know, it's amazing what we're able to do as people are able to listen and communicate and hear what God is saying through us and what others are saying as they come in, share their comments and their thoughts and what God is doing with them. So, Mom, we really truly appreciate her listening, not just because you're her son, but, you know, because this is just where she's been. So we're grateful for that. And Sister Sanders, how are you doing this evening, Sister? What's going on?
I'm doing good. Not really much has been going on. Not that much going on. I've been definitely talking about the show and just sharing what we've been talking about with with friends and family, and just, you know, really just working to get networking to get other people on the show and different things like that. So, yeah, that's about it.
Well, thank you, and we definitely truly appreciate that. So let's just get right into it. Tonight's show is Where's Your Money Going? And I'm believing that starting tonight, y'all, this is going to be probably at least a three-part series, if we want to say it like that. Tonight we're going to be focusing on where is your money going or where is the money going, and I'll explain that in a minute. Next week on November the 14th, we're going to focus on where is your money going, and then on the 21st of November, we're going to focus on priority giving. So as we deal with, again, recovering economically, setting a house in order, we see that we can't do this thing by ourselves. Matter of fact, last week's show, Economic Recovery Together, was what we talked about. And I say all of that because I think it's time for us to take the conversation to another level. We really need to strengthen our position on this path. And for tonight's show, there's a foundation that we're going to be dealing with for all those who are listening. This early in the show, we're going to be talking about trust and transparency. So what I want everybody to do is to keep in mind that for tonight, the focus is on what happens to the money, what happens to your money when it leaves your hands and gets into the hands of the church, what happens to the money when it gets into the hands of that community organization, that CSC campaign, as Brother Feaster mentioned last week, that business cooperative, that nonprofit organization, whatever it is, that thing that you support, what happens to the money when it goes from there? And I'm hoping and I'm praying that that is where we're going in the direction that was on the heart of our caller last week that threw that question out there, or that threw that statement out there to us, that many people don't even know where their money's actually going. So, and I want to say the reason we're making the distinction between tonight's show and next week's show is because I think there's some distinguishable responsibility that just warrants us actually giving the actual time to both of these subjects. I think there's some larger implications to things that we don't believe. There's some larger implications to the things that we don't understand, especially when we don't or we're not able to see how things operate from a local or a community aspect. So with that, all those who are listening right now, you don't have to wait for us to say anything. If you have something on your mind or on your heart, go ahead and press one on your dial pad. Or throughout the show, if we say something that sparks your attention, curiosity, you have a question for one of us, or just want to put something into the atmosphere, please do so, and we will join and let you have a seat at this table because that's what it's all about. I wanted to really just start off, or before I start off, go to two definitions. I wanted to deal with a definition of trust, and I want to deal with the definition of transparency because these are the two things that are leading the foundation to what we're going to get to. So this is going to be the first segment of the show, which we're going to be talking about trust and transparency. And Medea, Brother Feaster, you know how it happens. If we don't get to everything that we have planned for the second segment of the show, you know we'll pick it up next week. But the definition of trust, a firm belief in a reality, truth or ability or the strength of someone or something. Another definition of trust is confidence placed in a person by making that person the nominal owner of property be held or used for the benefit of others. So I'm just going to speak some comments, and Sister Sanders, Brother Feaster, you just jump in. As I started thinking, again, from last week on last week's show, I thought about foundation, and trust is foundation to any relationship. And, you know, I had to think about scriptures, and Sister Sanders and I was talking a little bit earlier. You know, we can quote scriptures all we want, y'all, but when do we hear scriptures being quoted about us trusting each other as people? Mm-hmm. Trust between us as people who God has placed on this earth to live and be in a community with one another is vital. If you don't have trust between one another, you can say I'm trusting God all day long, but that's not how this world, that's not how God created this thing to be, that we only trust him and do not trust each other. So there was a couple of scriptures, if y'all want to write them down. If you want to talk about them, we're free on the PRF table to be able to do that. Proverbs 3:5, which is a familiar passage of scripture to a lot of people, trust in the Lord with all our heart and lean not to their own understanding. Matthew 25, verse 14 through 30, which also parallels with Luke chapter 19, verse 12 to 27, and then Hebrews 3:13 and 5. Again, if y'all want to talk about them, often Sister Sanders or Brother Feaster, please do. But I thought about bringing up that those scriptures just so people can actually go back and take a look at them. And even though we don't find specific one-liner scriptures that speak concretely to trust between one another, I know for a fact that it is biblically tucked in throughout the whole book, especially when you look at relationships that people had, when you look at their family values, when you look at their structural practices in regard to stewardship and inheritances, is there. But we don't focus on it. So, Sister Dia, let me just come to you and let you just go ahead and take the mic and run with it from there.
Well, I just think when it comes to trust and transparency, so many different things come to mind, and you're absolutely right. I've never read anything where it tells us, you know, to trust one another. I mean, you have scriptures in there that say when your mother and your father forsake you, you know that the Lord is going to be there. But you also have scriptures that talk about, I forgot the scripture already, where it talks about having friends and how a brother is born for adversity. And you also have just the example of Jesus himself, who had 12 disciples. And these people, those men had to have trusted him because they left their past lives behind. They left what they were doing in order to follow Jesus. And he, from what I've read, and, you know, he never revealed himself to them. He asked, you know, them, who do people say that I am? And they gave him all of these different answers. You know, some say you're Elijah, some say you're Moses, some say you're, you know, this great prophet. But it was Peter who said, you know, you are the Messiah. And he said, you know, not to say anything. But that took a level of trust. It took a level of transparency on the part of Jesus, because, one, we know that Peter and Judas both betrayed Jesus. And being the Son of God, he had to have known it. But because he is the Son of God, he was able to see beyond their human flaws and weaknesses to say, I still want you to pick up your cross and follow me. And so they were there with him. You know, you have trust where you have Abraham and where God says, I want you to go up to this mountain and I want you to sacrifice your son. That took a level of trust. So whereas the Bible does not come right out to say we should trust one another, there are definite blatant examples of trusting one another in our human state with our strengths and weaknesses. And so I think that it's very important that we trust people. However, what I think is the nucleus of trust is being able to trust God. And if you can trust God, I think that being able to trust others will come easier. And I say that because I was just having a conversation with my husband on last week, to where I was just asking him, you know, I just asked him a simple question. And his answer was, you know, sometimes I have felt like I've lost how to trust God, you know. And that came because, you know, well, maybe I'm not doing certain things. I'm not praying or reading my word or building myself up. And so we begin to lose our trust in God, even though his word says trust him. And so when you look at trust, what I began to share with him was that our trust it cannot be dependent upon how we trust one another. We have a certain degree of trust. And so I asked him, I said, you know, if I say that I'm going to send you some money, would you believe me that I'm going to do it? And the answer was yes. I said, well, what would make you believe that I'm going to send you money? And he said, well, because you told me that that's what you're going to do. And I know the type of person that you are. If you say you're going to do something, you're going to do it. And so I said, but out of all of that, I said, because I've done it in the past, you were able to trust that I'm going to do it again. And that's how trust is built. We look at what people have done in the past to say, well, if they've done this, I can trust that they're going to come through this on this right here. The same level of trust has to be with God, you know, that if I prayed and God worked that thing out and I know I couldn't give nobody else the glory but him, now I'm beginning to build a level of how I trust God. But what happens a lot of times when people lose trust in people, in other people, or even in themselves, is that they said that they were going to do something and it didn't work out. It didn't happen. Nothing ever came of it. I said, we going to Disney World. It's 5 years later, and we never went to Disney World. I can't trust that the next time you tell me we're going on a big trip, as exciting as Disney World is, that we're going to go, because I still haven't gone yet. So if you tell me we're going to France, and we didn't even go to Disney World, which is right here in the United States of America, I know we ain't going to France because we ain't done this. We ain't done at home right now. And so what I just really sensed and was able to share with my husband was that when we look at our trust, one, we cannot look at how the trust with God as we with one another, because God has always come through with everything that he said he was going to do for us. And if we are still waiting, then keep continuing to build your trust in God, because there's something that he's really working in you, building your character. But I think a lot of times where mistrust comes is that we look at how people have failed us, and then we try to put that off on God to say, well, he ain't going to come through, you know, because I done had all of these experiences where I've depended on people to do stuff for me and ain't nobody came. And so we try to say that, compare God to that same thing. And I know I'm talking about two different things, but it's still dealing with trust. So what I want to say, bottom line, is that when you're looking at how you trust others, look at how you trust God. If you have a problem trusting God, then maybe you have forgotten what he's done for you. Because if you pray to God and he's opened up a door or did only what God can do, then you would know that you can trust him. And so you can then take that same trust and say, you know what, God, you didn't do what I needed you or asked you to do when I wanted it done or when I felt like it should have been done, but God, you still did it. And so we can take that and begin to frame it to how we relate to other people and giving people the opportunity. And I know sometimes people will fail us, and a lot of times when mistrust comes in is that people didn't do what they say they were going to do. And even if they couldn't do it, they didn't come back and say, you know what, I know I told you I was going to do this, but there's some plans that changed, or maybe because of some regulations and policies and laws that kicked in, you know, we're not able to do it at the time that we said. However, we're still going to push forward. We just got to make some different arrangements. I think the communication is a big part of the mistrust. People are not following up. They're not updating people. And so I think there's some things that have to be done. You know, so if we learn to trust God, you know, God may have told you, hey, you're going to go to school to be a teacher. You graduated high school, went to college, maybe, you know, something happened with finances, with your student loans or financial aid, so you weren't able to go to school for 2 years. But if you know that God said you was going to go to school to be a teacher, what are you doing during that time? Well, you keep trusting God because you know the word that he gave you. 3 years come, and you're back in school. And now, instead of having to get a student loan, you have a scholarship to pay for school where you don't have to pay a dime out of your pocket. And what God told you came to pass. You had to trust him. And you couldn't trust him with the natural sense of seeing, tasting, touching, smelling, and feeling, but you had to trust him in the spiritual. I believe that the same thing applies to us in the natural, but it has to start with what is our relationship like with God? Do we trust that he's going to do what he says he's going to do? And are we? And when people cannot do what they say they're going to do, do we have enough, I guess, intestinal fortitude to let people know, communicate with them effectively to say, hey, here's the reasons why we can't do this, so that people still trust your word, not that you lied to them, but that the plans had to change. And so that's what I think a lot of times people struggle with, is communication. People just, instead of saying we can't do it because of X, Y, and Z, they just don't say nothing. And so you leave people to form their own thought process behind something. And so I just, you know, I ain't looking for a right or wrong answer. I'm just putting out there some things that I know God has just given me that I've just been talking about recently when it comes to the area of trust.
I got you. And you said something that sparked something in one of our callers right now. So let's go to the phone lines and let's go to 1959. And again, just for those of you who are just tuning into the show, we're talking about where is your money going. And right now we're dealing with two things that are just foundational to having a good understanding of this conversation that we'll get into momentarily about where your money is going. Where is the money going after it gets from your hands to the church, from your hands to the nonprofit organization, from your hand to the business cooperative? That's what we're dealing with tonight on the PRF table. So caller, last 419-59, welcome to the PRF table.
Thank you. To the last caller and I guess to all the panelists, so let's say we trust in God, and I'm not even saying on an individual level that, I want to go to college and that scholarship comes, in a different time than I want. But let's just say I trust in God and I believe in God and I believe God's going to deliver for me. And I am, 300 years ago as an oppressed African-American, a black person in the United States. How do you still hold that trust 300 years later, whether I may not individually have been perfect, but somebody or somebody's certainly believed in God that would deliver us from oppression? How do you still hold your faith?
Brother Feaster, take a stab at it, my brother.
I actually like this question. So in what you're saying, this is what I hear. The answer to that question is wrapped in faith, because when you're talking about trusting God during trying times, it's looking at past history. If God said he was going to do it, and God has already done things that he said before, that's where trust and faith kind of wrapped into each other. During the oppression time, I mean, a lot of people, this is one of my things I like to say, a lot of people gravitate to the first half of Hebrews chapter 11, which we call the Hall of Faith. And it talks about how all the people did these miraculous things for God through faith. But at the end of the chapter, as we're still talking about faith, it talks about how, people were burned, children was taken from parents, people were persecuted and tortured for doing what was right, being obedient and following God and trusting God. So a lot of that trust in God is simply believing and knowing, not necessarily seeing it, but believing and knowing that if God said it was going to happen, then it's going to happen. The same thing the same oppression you're talking about in our community is the same oppression that happened to the Israelites when they went to Egypt. And if you read the Bible before it all happens, a lot of people look just at the oppression. But God told Abraham that his people would be oppressed for 300 years. But don't worry, I will deliver them. And this was years before the oppression that they were told about that. So now they had to take that word, and while they were in it, they had to hold on to that word and have that faith and trust in God to know that he was going to do it. And that's how I hear the answer to that question. Does that help you out, caller?
Caller 1959, you still with us?
Yeah, sorry. It does help me out. But I guess my follow-up would be, what did God tell black folk? And when is our 300 years going to end?
Our 300 years is going to end whenever we want it to end. I don't look at myself as being oppressed because of the color of my skin. And I think so many times that we continue to go to walk in that mentality. My thing is, if God says that you're delivered, at what point do you say, I am delivered, and walk in it? And until black people can stop living in that moment of oppression and can say, you know what, I've been delivered, and I know, and sometimes deliverance is not easy. You have people, real life examples, people who are on drugs. You have people who have been delivered from pornography. You have people who have been delivered from a lot of different things, from alcoholism. I have one of my NCOs who had a soldier who used to be on meth, and she said that there were certain smells, sweet smells, that she could not handle, but she had not used meth in several years. But there were certain things like that, that if she smelled it, it would trigger her, and so she had to be very careful. But she was delivered from it. And I'm not looking at this young lady's faith or anything like that, but she was delivered from that. But sometimes there could be residue. And my question would be, when do we stop saying that we're oppressed? Because I'm not oppressed. I am not oppressed. What happened to my ancestors a couple of generations ago, it is very upsetting. It is very hurtful to know that people would look at another race, another human being, to say, you are beneath me, you are inferior, and I am superior, so therefore I'm going to put you in slavery. And to know that we are no longer in slavery in the sense of picking cotton and, you know, getting whipped if we didn't do the right thing or whatever. We are oppressed as long as we say that we are.
Well, you know,
go ahead.
Let me throw my 15 cents in. You know, I think I'm understanding exactly what our caller is saying. There's a lot. I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, caller, that you're saying that the black race is oppressed. And we know we have more than black people that listen to the show and participate on the show. I'm not taking it that you're saying the whole black race is oppressed. But there's a lot of people that are. Is that a fair assessment of what you're saying?
It is.
So, to me, this is how I look at community. If there is, everybody knows in most of our cities in America, the south side of town is the worst side of town when it comes to equitable distribution of resources, when it comes to the appearance of the neighborhoods. The south side of most cities in America are neglected. So if my city has a south side that is neglected, I can't say that the whole city is great. Why am I going to say the whole city is great of Philly when North Philly looks like garbage? When it takes the police longer time to get down to some place in North Philly, when if you go down to Northeast Philadelphia, for example, an incident occurs, cops will be there in a minute. So I think what is important for us to really continue to try to do, as we do on the PRF table, is to look at and allow people to talk about where are some of these segments, where are these pockets, these locations, these individuals who are in a still oppressed mindset, to deal with the caller's question or comment, because if we don't deal with what is going on, where it's going on, we're just talking about stuff in the abstract. So I think you've heard me say so many times on this show, I talk about where I live. I talk about my church. I talk about the churches that I know that are the 13 churches on the 1-point-something-mile stretch before you turn off to get to my house. I talk about what's going on specifically in my community because now I'm actually attaching something to it that we can actually deal with. Yes, I'm putting it out there where everybody's understanding, everybody's hearing it, but just because that's going on in my neighborhood doesn't mean that that's going on in everybody's neighborhood. So I think we understand that. So did you have any other follow-up to that caller?
I didn't. I appreciate the responses and the perspectives. Thank you.
Let me ask you something. Go ahead.
I was thinking about, as you and actually as all three of y'all was talking, I was thinking about a couple of weeks ago, somebody mentioned a photo of a black man in chains, and he was painting his chains gold. And I didn't say anything then, but everybody took the exact opposite of what I saw in that photo. So everybody took as in this man is accepting his change. This man is bound by the gold or the materialistic things. What I saw, and I wish I had said it then, but maybe it wasn't in time, and maybe now is the right time. What I saw was not necessarily a man in bondage per se, but a man embracing his bondage. And what do I mean by that? A lot of times we're in bondage and we are free. We have a job. We have a car. We have the nice amenities in life. But we're in bondage because we're bound to the amenities of life. We're bound to the job. That photo said to me is, regardless of what I have on me, you're not going to tell me how I'm going to react to it. I kind of, and I might not be explaining it right, but if you've seen the movie Hurricane, when Denzel Washington played this inmate who was sent to jail for a crime that he didn't commit, actually he was just arrogant and they found a reason to put him in jail. He said, I've made my prison my home because they want my prison to imprison me. And that's kind of how I saw that photo. So what am I saying with everything, with what the caller was saying? I'm saying a lot of times we're in bondage not because of somebody else's account, but because of our own account. And the only way, and JR, you hit on this, the only way to get out of that type of bondage is we have to change our mentality. We have to change the way we think. You have people in million-dollar homes that are in bondage. And you have people that are living not even from check to check because they can't even live from check to check in a one-bedroom house with rats and roaches, and they're free because they're not allowing those things to put them in bondage. So a lot of times, in a lot of cases, when I talk to people in certain times like that, their bondage is self-made. Their bondage is mental. Their bondage is something that they, and the sad thing is a lot of times they cannot see their way out. So they accept it. But what I saw in that photo was not him accepting his chains. I saw in that photo him saying, you want these chains to bind me. You want these chains to hinder me. You want these chains to stop me or even slow me down. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the chains that you have given me and I'm going to paint them gold, as in something that's valuable, something that's treasured, just to show you outwardly that your bondage is only your side. It's not my side. I'm still free to do what I want. I'm still free to do what I want to do. Granted, yeah, there's a parameter. There's some limits. There's some, you know, some things I got to worry about. But it's like a dog. You put a dog in the backyard, regardless if he's on a chain or not, the yard fence, he's free within the limits of that backyard. But somebody else will ask, why did you bind that dog up? He's running around in the backyard. So for me, a lot of that is a mentality, and that's how I saw that. And that was my comment I wanted to say on that.
Well, I don't know how to get us back on where our money is going, so I'm going to have to let somebody else do it because y'all just got me, my head spinning right now. But I think as we talk, when we get into the second segment of the show, I think some of what has been said as we were talking about originally trust and getting ready to go into talking about transparency as something that's foundational to having an understanding about where your money is going. I think some of that mentality that you're talking about, Brother Feaser, I definitely know what our caller was talking about and the question or comment that he was posing about being oppressed, because this thing about economics, this thing about social economics, after what we just went through and what we are continuing to go through right now in regards to how the government shutdown just affected so many people's lives, how we even got on this topic or this discussion or series of discussions about money and getting on the path to economic recovery, all of the things that y'all were mentioning, they're valid. They have some relative to what we're actually talking about because people are actually dealing with these things. And I was going to say this at the end of the show, but if we're not willing to have a conversation about certain things, such as what y'all have just been mentioning, what our caller mentioned, what our caller last week had mentioned as well, if we're not willing to have these type of conversations, we're never going to peel back the onion. An onion has several layers to it, and that's how we are as individuals. So when we're dealing with trust, like Sister Adia had given us so much on trust several minutes ago, as we deal with transparency, which we're about to go into right now, as we deal with it, we have to be open. The definition of transparency is talking about being candid, open, and frank. That's what the definition of transparent is. It also talks about something that you can easily see through or understand or recognize. So if I don't understand you as an individual, if I don't understand you as a group or an organization or what y'all are doing, then how in the world can I expect there to be transparency? It doesn't mean that somebody is actually trying to hide something, but sometimes, as you said eloquently, Sister Adia, sometimes people do not know how to communicate. So if you have people that are not in a position or do not know how to communicate, then we're going to have this thing that looks like a thing of mistrust, but really may not be trust. It may just be how that individual is in regards to this individual is not able to communicate, doesn't know how to say what he or she has on their actual mind. So if there's anybody else that's on the line, I see a lot of people that are listening to us right now. Press one on your dial pad, jump into the conversation. So, Brother Freestyle, I'm going to come to you since I hit off with Sister Adia on this trust thing. I'm going to hit you with transparency. You know, one of the things that I was thinking about was when it comes to transparency, and again, we're talking about where your money is going, not where you're putting your money, but once that money gets to the church, once that money gets to that nonprofit, to that community organization, to Brother Feaster's combined federal campaign contributions that he sends in on this check, everything, once it gets to those locations, what are they doing with it? We can't talk about economic recovery and think that it only is something that's being affected by what's going on within our local community. Because as I mentioned last week, in the church that I am a member of, we support something called World Hunger. And what I hear the pastor saying every Wednesday night when we participate in this is we participate with thousands of other churches every year or every night whenever we do this. Thousands of churches are involved in this World Hunger offering. And at the end of the year, we give all of the money that we raise to World Hunger, but we just had the World Hunger offering from a national perspective done, I think, 2 weeks before I had that discussion on the show. So there's a disconnect there. Not saying that the pastor is lying, that we're not giving the money, but when we have these things that don't sound right, don't look right, how can we get to a point where we're able to be able to trust individuals and where they're able to understand that we're not questioning individuals' trust. We're just looking for some transparency. So, you know, as a member of a community, I think it's fair to be able or to ask how much is needed for a particular project. And, again, I want people to understand where we're at. We were talking about a few weeks ago a one-item agenda. What can we do? What can my church, Brother Feast's church, Sister Adia's church, who are all within the same community, and Brother such-and-such nonprofit organization in the same community, what can we do as a one-item agenda? What's that one thing that we can do that we can push forward together so that people can see that we're working together as organizations, as churches? It was very, very easy when we go and look in the Bible. When it came to Moses in the tabernacle, when it came to David in the temple, it was not a hard thing for everybody to contribute. Matter of fact, they never had to ask any of the participants, any of the, I'll call them contributors to the temple, any of the contributors to the tabernacle. They didn't have to even ask them more than once. But there was transparency there because out of all of the riches and everything that David contributed to the temple, y'all, everything that he contributed, everybody was able to see what he contributed. So he wasn't up there saying, I contributed in equivalency of our terminology today, I gave $10 million, where the people said, oh, we hear you saying that you gave $10 million, but we never see the $10 million. So transparency comes from not just honesty of a leader behind what is actually needed, but what about why something is needed, Brother Feaster? How do we deal with this thing of transparency? And again, everybody listen to me. We're not even trying to entertain any of this nonsense or foolishness about putting people on blast, not on this show. It's not going to happen. But we just want to talk about situations. So be respectful of individuals if you're going to call in, if you have something to say about somebody or a particular organization, because I think it's unfair if we're calling out folks but don't have them sitting at the table with us to be able to respond. So, Brother Feaster, what do we deal with? How are we dealing with this thing when it comes to transparency and as far as honesty of a leader behind what's needed, but also why something is needed?
Well, with that intro, you kind of almost messed me up because I was going to talk about a personal experience that I went through. So I'm carrying on muddy waters right now.
Just don't call them out unless you want to get them to the table so they can respond.
Negative. I was not going to call them out. But I was going to start off with a personal experience, and I actually have a story in the Bible, which to me it deals with both trust and transparency. But the personal story when it comes to transparency comes when I was sitting in the church business meeting, the yearly budget meeting or something, one of many meetings of the church. And so we're sitting in this meeting, and we're talking about the function of the church. So now it's time to talk about the budget. This particular portion was set aside for the budget of the church. And somebody made the comment that nobody from the finance department is in the meeting. So that was a big trigger that nobody from the finance department was in this meeting, and now we're going to talk about money. As we get along into the meeting talking about where the money, this is how much money is coming in, and this is where the money is going. So now there was a couple of questions on one purchase. It was a large amount, and many people in the church knew of every church has to build a fund. So I'm going to use that as an example. So on this particular item, it's a budget fund, $10,000. That's just an example. And so the questions were coming to, so can you break down the $10,000? Because people had heard, and it was a lot of rumors going on, so these people were there trying to get their questions answered. And they wanted a breakdown of that particular amount of money, wherever it was. And being that only the pastor was there and nobody from the financial department was there, he tap-danced around it, and that's my opinion. He tap-danced around it. He tried to justify some of the items, but what he justified did not come up to $10,000. So the meeting ended very badly. A lot of people was upset. A lot of people were frustrated. You know, there's always a meeting after the meeting, and the meetings that was going on after the meeting were not productive. They were not, people were upset and frustrated. So then roll around Sunday, now the finance department people are there, and inside the bulletin was a breakdown of that particular item. My opinion is that was poorly done. If we're going to talk about the budget, then somebody should be there from the finance department. Again, this is my opinion. The other thing is, if you're in that situation to where you have to explain it and you can't, especially talking about folks' money, and that's the way we think about it. We talked about this months ago when we talked about stewardship. Folks' money, they want to know, like we're talking about tonight, where that money is going. In this particular case, the questions could not be answered. So when we talk about transparency, in this case, it seemed, and this is what people were saying, it seemed as if things were being hidden. Yeah. It seems as if I can't see the breakdown of this $1,000, $10,000, because there is something in there that you do not want me to see. And because of that, it caused a lot of tension and a lot of strife in something that could have been resolved a whole lot easier. So we're talking about being transparent and being trustworthy. It's really putting yourself out there. If I'm one of the receivers or the candidate to receive this information, then I should be able to get it. Or don't tell me that I can get it. You know, there's a lot of agencies, there's a lot of places that we send this money to, and they don't tell us what's going on with the money. We trust that when we send money to American Red Cross that they're going to do the right thing with that money. we trust that when we, and I'm not going to call out any other organization, but we trust that when we donate money to these particular organizations, that they're going to do the right thing with them. And in most cases, we don't even question them. Why?
Exactly. So is it on them? Or is it on us?
That's where I'm going. That's exactly where I'm going. In some cases, it's because we don't question them. That's one of the problems, because I don't know too many organizations out there that if you wait a little while, just watch the news, there we go, laundering the money, misappropriation of money, money, all this stuff finally comes out, because when we give them our money, we don't ask those questions. We don't do the research behind it. We don't even try. We just simply say, well, you know what? They've been trustworthy for this long, then I'm going to go ahead and do it. And then we get upset when, you know, so we do have an obligation.
We're going to talk about that next week, too. We're going to talk about the obligation and the responsibility from our point of view next week, because it's easy to get off on what we're not doing. But when we talk and focus so much about what we're not doing, I didn't do the research, or we, as you said, we didn't do the research on it, or we didn't look into this, and because they've been doing it for so long, then that takes all of the accountability away from the individuals who have a responsibility to do right by whatever it is that's given to them. Think about it. This is your baby. This is stewardship that we're really talking about.
Exactly. And like I told you, I just knew it was going to hit me somewhere. I just didn't know where. Because you're right. It is stewardship. And matter of fact, let's go back a couple of years. I think about 10 years ago when mutual funds blew up and everybody was diving into investing money into mutual funds. And people were making money and, you know, all these mutual funds was coming available and all this good stuff. And then finally, all of a sudden, somebody opened up the mutual fund and looked at the different agencies that were in there. And they had big name, big ticket items up front. And then all of a sudden, it said something like XYZ Production or, you know, Shoe House Room Production. And somebody said, well, what is XYZ Production and Shoe House Production? And what they did not know until this particular person, to my understanding, one person started this, and it spread like wildfire. And if I'm wrong, please, you know, charge it to my head and not my heart. And if you know, please correct us or correct me. But to my understanding, one person decided to do the research and find out what are these miscellaneous agencies, groups, or things that I'm contributing to in this mutual fund. And what they found out was they were pornography sites. And all because people did not research it. They were promoting this unknowingly. So finally somebody did the research, and then that blew up. Now everybody wants to do the research.
But what did the company do wrong?
I'm not blaming the company at all. The company was probably, I mean, I'm a businessman. The company was probably offered the opportunity to be a part of this mutual fund. This not, in that case, I think it's more of my responsibility of not doing the research before I start investing. That's where I was going with that. That mutual fund is doing what a mutual fund do. You taking your money, using it with these businesses, and bringing you back money. That's what they're doing. And they went out there and said, hey, who wants to be a part of this mutual fund? Who wants to be a part of it? Now, it's up to me to look at those different companies, those different agencies in that mutual fund. That's my responsibility.
But you can't place the same criteria on a company in the business world as you do with the church, which is where we're talking about. We're talking about churches. We're talking about these organizations in our community. I can't place that same litmus test. I just can't do it as Exxon. Exxon is not in my community. Aflac is in my community. So I can do it with Aflac because they have community ties. But once we start going so broad out there into la-la land with just whoever this is that we have no relationship with, we can't expect the same type of results. but you have those same type of, you have the relationship factor there with your local church, the church you belong to, I belong to, anybody else on the line that's listening to the show. We have those. We're able to get to those individuals who are making those decisions, whether it's somebody in the finance room, whether it's the president of a nonprofit organization or the CEO. We have that ability. But I just don't think that is, I just don't think it's the same thing when we start talking about big business outside in a very large context, when we got things that we can actually make an actual effort to within our local community, which is where we're really trying to stay focused at.
Well, one of the things that
makes sense.
Aspect, yeah,
mm-hmm,
I mean,
it does.
To
because
me,
you don't see a difference between the responsibility of where money goes when it goes into the church versus where it goes when it goes into BP?
No,
come
because
on, bro.
If I maybe, hey, you know, finance is not my thing, but I don't see it. Let me tell you why. Because if I am a steward of my dollars and I want to invest my money into this particular church, agency, or organization, it is my responsibility to know where that money is going. Because if I am being an enabler, I am promoting this business, this agency, this church, that's what I'm doing with my money, with my time, with my talents, whatever the case. And that's why I don't see the difference. So just because BP is huge and everything, and I might have to do a little more research, what's the difference in the church? There are churches out there that's got so much going on that the little old lay member ain't got a clue what's going on.
We don't want to generalize things like that. You see what I'm saying? Let's be specific about what we're talking about. Go ahead, Sister D. I'm sorry.
The big difference is
ministry.
I have not heard Exxon say that they serve Jesus Christ.
Right.
The difference is that's the umbrella. We are saying that we are Christians. These churches, you know what I'm saying, are saying, hey, I am proclaiming and teaching the word of God. They are saying that I am an ambassador in the earth realm representing God. And so because they're representing God, I don't know who Exxon represents. I don't know what their values and their mission and their belief is. But I know that the mission for Christians is to go ye therefore. That is the commission, is to witness and to bring others to Christ. And I'm pretty sure that if the disciples with Jesus, if they said, you know, they had a treasurer. I can't remember. Was it Judas?
It sure was.
Sure was.
You see what I'm saying? So there was an organization that was set up even with the disciples and Jesus. There was an organization that was set up. And so what has happened in the church and sometimes our communities is that we just want to throw something together and then just step back and say, okay, we want y'all money, and we're going to do all these great things, and then that's it. No. When Jesus went down to the fish and took out his taxes, and went and paid his taxes, he said, I got to pay Caesar what I owe him. He ain't say, oh, because I'm the son of God, I'm going to be exempt myself from paying taxes, and then give the example to his disciples that they're going to do the same thing. They don't have to pay their taxes because they was with Jesus. And so we have a responsibility to do the right thing because of who we say we serve. Because if it were just that simple to do what Exxon or any of these other corporations do, then we have that, and we probably will end up on American Greed for that very same mentality. So the difference is that I see is who I say I serve. If I'm a representative in the earth realm, if I'm an ambassador for Jesus Christ, then my standards should be different. If somebody wants to know about a deal, my life should be transparent to say, hey, you know, like I was telling Nate, I'm somebody randomly passes by and sees me and Nate talking. They may go back and say, Kathy, I saw Nate the other day, and he was talking to somebody. Now, they could just very well have come and said the same thing to me, but they went to somebody else, the breakdown. And that's what we're dealing with, is the breakdown. And I am you know, I can say that one of the churches that I went to in Virginia when I was stationed there, they would have a meeting, and you got to see everything that the church had planned and projected for that year. We did it every, at the end of every year. They said, here is everything that we brought in for this year. Here is where it went. Here's what we have planned for next year, some things that we want to do, and here is where we're looking at the money that we have carried over to where we are projecting for it to go next year. This is what we're looking to raise from tithes and offering because of the things that we know we want to do that's going to do what? Build the church up, the members, not the building, the members, and also to do outreach in the community. I had never seen anything like that in depth in my 32 years of living. Why can't we let people know where their tithes and offering go? Because people are working hard for their money. And so the thing is that if we want people to trust us, we got to do something. You just can't give me your word to say, oh, just trust me. No, no, no. The Lord said to trust him and lean not into my own understanding, because my own understanding might make me want to punch you in your face because I don't know what you did with my money. So we need to, we owe it to people to tell them, hey, I want to build trust with you, then I want to let you know, here's some things that we're planning on doing. We want to build a daycare center. We want to build a school. It's going to cost this much money to do it. People will get excited about that because they know where their money is going. It's a vision. It's a plan, but we don't want to plan. Sometimes I don't know if there's a vision. Because if there's no vision, there's nothing to plan for. So what am I giving you my money for if you don't even have a vision? Because there certainly there's no need for a plan. And we talked about that on last week. And so a lot of times we want people to trust in us, but we want them to trust in what we're saying. And we know the thing that moved God was action. He spoke it, and it came to pass. Things come to pass when we speak and do something. He said, write the vision and make it plain. Whatever you speak, that thing begins to work. It begins to come into motion. And sometimes we don't want to put the work and the effort in, but we want people to believe. Like how we say, I think one of the comedians said, we got a building fund, had this building fund, and they put one doorknob on the church door yet. But yet we still got a building fund. Ain't with the Home Depot or Walmart and got a doorknob yet, but we still got a building fund. What are we building? Highway to heaven? I'm just saying. I'm going to shut my mouth.
Oh, my goodness. We can expect for Sister Adia to go off at least once every show, and I think you've done it for tonight. You know, this whole thing – well, Bonfisa, go ahead, bro. I'm going to let you come back because I've been quiet and you've been quiet after you. Go ahead, bro. Just go ahead.
I stand where I still stood when I made my initial comments because maybe tonight's not the night because we're talking more about the church, but I still stand where I stood because I have to stand. If I am a steward of my money, my time, my talents, where I put what God has given me, that's my responsibility. If I don't know where it's going and I blindly just do whatever, then that's on me. That's on me. You know, we can say all day long that, you know, well, I ain't even going to say that. But that's just where I'm at. I think as a steward, even and you're saying about the big business, I may not know itemizedly, I may not know the item, that's not even a word. I may not see the itemized list of where it goes cent for cent, but when I understand or find out what that agency is supporting or what they're promoting, then if I continue to support that business, then that's stewardship.
When you go to get some gas, you're not supporting an agency. You're entering into a contract where you get some gas, get some money, and they give you some gas. The relationship is done. That's the business world. It's about profits. in dollars. It's not about ministry. That's the only thing that, I mean, I'm not going to belabor it, but that's the big stark difference. And Adia, you said it better than I could. It's about ministry. So once I go and buy some bubble gum at the store, I'm not going to do no research. Let's be real. I ain't trying to do no research on the company that I bought some bubble gum from at the convenience store when I got some gas. I'm not even thinking about all that stuff. I'm thinking about what have I provided to them and what are they required to provide to me. And our relationship is over at that particular point.
Mm-hmm.
It's really over. It's not a continued thing. Now, if I want to be a supporter of some of the initiatives of that particular company or some of the other initiatives or projects of the local church, other than just giving my tithes, if I want to give to another ministry in another congregation, then yes, there is some responsibility. But again, we'll talk about our responsibility next week. We're looking at where is the money going once it leaves our hands and gets to that particular organization, nonprofit, business cooperative, whatever it is. And are they doing the things that they say they're going to do it? If you have enough courage to come and ask me to support something like that, then you should be able to be in a position, meaning the organization should be in a position where if I have a question about something, and you mentioned this, Brother Feaster, that it's not a problem for them answering it. But we have to make sure that we're going to the right person who has the right answers. We can't just go to anybody. So if I'm going to support your church and you're doing something to feed the homeless or to feed the hungry, I can't have the same mindset that I just can't. I cannot have the same mindset that everybody's going to do it like I do it. Perceptions are realities. Remember what you said in your finance meeting. You were talking about your feeling. But sometimes if we take the time to try to get an understanding of what's going on, and maybe that pastor did not have all the answers. Could he have just been honest enough and say, hey, I don't know the answer, really, you know, maybe it's somebody messed up something. I'll get back with you. But I think what you brought back was they provided some figures at that Sunday. Is that right?
Yeah, but I left a whole lot out of the story. There was so much more. But, yes, you are right. Those numbers still weren't accurate. But, yes, they did provide some figures. There's more to that story. But I was just using that as an example of being transparent and understanding and having a responsibility and, you know, where that money goes. So my question, and maybe I'm going to just, my question is, where does it say that the church is obligated to tell me where the dollars go?
You're not going to find that in the Bible, and we know that. I mean,
right.
Where is it in the Bible that you know, should be in the army? Where is it in the Bible that we should have a secular job? These
so
are things that are not
the
there,
church,
but I think what
so why
what
do we hold the church responsible for why do we hold the church responsible for telling me where my money go? And I got you 100%. You're right. Everything that we do is not outlined in the Bible. But why are we holding the church responsible? Why are we holding all churches responsible for penny-to-penny accountability? And
nobody's doing that.
Because it boils back down to transparency and trust boils down to integrity, being honest.
Think about this.
And you got to look – and remember when Paula talked to us when we had the show, I don't know if it was earlier this year, about tithing. Remember the issue that was going on in chapter, I want to say one or two, was that the priests weren't doing the right thing with the people's money.
Chapter two.
So he said, you will be cursed with the curse because they weren't doing the right thing with the people's money. Now let's fast forward to the 21st century, how pastors are, and other people are still taking that scripture out of context because they haven't read chapters one, two, or three, and so they're still using it out of context. Well, how is that still in the 21st century that people are still using that verse out of context? How is that? Oh, easy, because they haven't taken the time to read the beginning of it. And that's
what I see is not happening is that we have integrity issues in the church. And so when we stop acting like there are not integrity issues and that everybody is honest, you know, and they just tell the truth all the time, then I probably won't have to ask you, you know, well, where's the money going? And it's not that you're trying to check somebody to see if they're, quote, unquote, doing the right thing. But my thing is I want to know that when I'm giving, you know what I'm saying, it makes me feel good, one, just to know that I'm giving towards my church anyway. I know that just makes me feel good, one, because that's what God, he's requiring. He said this is a reasonable service thing. It's reasonable service. But to know that you are impacting the kingdom, to know that maybe 20 of your dollars went to go feed a family right here in the United States, that to me is just like, you know what, God, you are doing great, amazing things, and I am able to help with that. That is amazing to know something like that. But when you don't know, I mean, you know what I'm saying? For all you know, it could be money used to get for somebody. I don't know, but it just makes me feel good to know that. It really does.
And let me respond. Again, remember what we were talking about. Remember where we are. We're talking about on this path to economic recovery. We're still going forward with what we've been talking about week after week after week for the last 4 weeks. This thing is not about the church budget. This is about what can we do in our community collectively as church organizations, religious organizations, nonprofit organizations, that we're all in the same doggone community together. So, yes, it does matter, because if Pastor Dunlap is trying to hook up with Pastor Feaster and trying to hook up also with Pastor Sanders and say, you know what, we have a homelessness problem in our city of Fayetteville. If there's issues with transparency, if there's issues with trust in Pastor Dunlap's church or Pastor Sanders' church, then Pastor Feaster, and you don't have those issues, you know what's going to happen? You're going to have people that are going to be reluctant in coming together with all three of us because there's already issues in your own individual church. So whatever the issues are, if there's those issues in that own pastor's individual congregation, they have to be dealt with. Mm. They have to be dealt with. But if they're never talked about, if all I'm going to do is give the money to you as my pastor, and I feel that I never have the right, the God-given right. Remember, you talked about stewardship. We're not going to talk about next week's show if we get there. But I have a right to say, hey, what's going on? Let me give you a perfect example. Several years ago, we needed a new van because we have a lot of young people that come to our Wednesday night Bible study, 100 plus from throughout the community, 100 plus. That's almost more people that come to church every Sunday in 75% of the churches in America. Okay. So the pastor gets up and he says, we need another van, y'all. I've checked it out already. The van cost $30,000. We already have somebody committed to like $8,000. Pray and see what God tells you and then just do it. Didn't hear nothing about it for several weeks. Pastor comes back and gives an update. We need X amount of dollars. We have this amount. That is transparency. There's not going to be a question that church is not doing what they say they're going to do, and I say they, meaning the leadership, as it was put out through the pastor, so nobody's going to have a problem with that. And you know what happened? The van was purchased eventually. So everybody saw, Sister Adia, the fruits of their labors. Mm-hmm. People give for causes. They give for reasons. They give because they want to make sure that certain things are being taken care of, because they see it as an act of worship, because it's about giving to the kingdom of God, to furthering the kingdom. All of those reasons why us believers, we give, whether I know that or whether I don't know it. That's a good thing. So let me throw this other part of it too, part there. We never had an issue with that. Now, my pastor may listen to this, and he can have a conversation with me if he wants to after he listens to the show. But last week, Pastor asked us, after a sermon, to give towards a brand new sign. brand new sign. No problem. The sign brings in people. I got you. I understand all his rationale and everything. But you know what wasn't said out loud? How much does the doggone sign cost? You know what else was said out loud? Somebody, before it came to the body of the church, somebody already said they wanted to give X amount of dollars towards this project already. So that means there were some people already in the know about this, and some people were not. Some people may look at that and say, well, doggone, how did such and such know that I didn't know? Am I an afterthought to giving or to contributing to this thing for a kingdom purpose? So you've got to have ground rules when you're talking about what are we going to do when this money comes in. If me, you, and Sister Adia are all working towards one cause, we all can't hold the money at the same time. So there has to be that conversation. There has to be some proactive measures so that when people start asking questions, the integrity, as you just mentioned, Sister Adia, that integrity is not put into question. And if there's been some history, as you said earlier, Brother Feaster, if there's some history there, you can't continue to try to keep asking when there's some negative history there that ain't never been dealt with. I just say we can't do it. So there has to be that willingness, the willingness of the organization, the willingness of the church. Not saying that they have to, but there has to be a willingness there to be able to answer questions. And these people who give, as well as the people that are going to be receiving, they have to be willing to ask the questions. If something doesn't look right, ask. Everybody needs to know that they have that right and that ability to be able to ask questions, especially about things that are going to affect you and your community. I think this will keep down confusion. I really do. And I think it will strengthen that position of transparency. Remember, the things that we do, especially in church, we're not doing it for our individual such-and-such church. We're doing it because there's people on the outside looking at us as well and looking at what we're doing. So, Brother Feaster, you talked about all the mess in the mutual fund. So if the people on the outside of the church walls, and I'm done, if the people on the outside of the church walls are seeing this mess go on that you're talking about, then there needs to be a different type of example from inside of the church walls. But we are the ones that have to take that message from inside of the church walls to outside. I have to be the one. I'm the one that needs to be talking about, you know what, he just asked for it. 6 months later, we got the van. Sister Dia, what's your closing comments? Because I think I'm done.
You know, I tell you, when you gave the first story, I definitely just see the people's faith growing because they didn't see the van. They didn't see the, you know, how many other people were given, and that's what faith is. And you touched on Hebrews 12 and 1 or 8 and 1 or whatever verse it is, but you talked about faith. And so it was put out there. The vision was there. We maybe didn't know how long it was going to take to get or saw the van. It increased their faith because they didn't see it at first, but they know that, you know what, I'm going to get it. And that's exactly what faith is. It's seeing, having, you know, I don't see it, but I believe that it's going to happen. I have faith. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for. And so when we can do those kind of things, I think it definitely begins to increase people's faith. And so now when you, I can trust. I know you got integrity. I know because you're going to be transparent with me. And so I just saw, what I saw was the increasing of people's faith. And sometimes people's faith levels are low because of things that have happened before, and there was never any restoration or reconciliation.
Wow, good point. Brother Feaster, get ready to close us out, my brother. I think I have one more thing to say, but do what you got to do, bro.
My comment, I believe, is going to be short and sweet. It's ironic, not ironic, but it's just timely how we're talking about trust and transparency. And for the last 30 minutes, that's exactly what we've done. I've been very, actually, we've all been very transparent in what we believe and what we understand about this topic. The other thing I love about this show and this group of people, and if you as listeners don't know this, tonight should have proven it to you that we don't always agree, but we we always sit at the same table. And so there is no – I don't want anybody to walk away thinking there's any bad blood. Me and JR will be clowning later on. Me and Adil will be clowning later on. The Lord say the same. We'll all be right back here sitting at a table next week either dealing with this as a continuation or wherever God is leading this table. So that's what I want to say. I just want to make sure that everybody knew that there is no bad blood just because – you know, it got pretty intense for about 20, 30 minutes. I still got mad love for them, and they still got mad love for me, and we still have mad love for all of you. Amen. Those are my final comments.
We got mad love for you even when you're wrong, bro.
I guess.
Let me tell y'all, you know, this is what we have to do. Just imagine this. And I think we'll be done in a few minutes. But just imagine this. Imagine if the ministers, the ministerial leaders, the pastors, the heads of nonprofit organizations, fraternities, sororities, Kiwanis, Lions Club, whatever, can do exactly what Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders, and I did in your own community and still have that love. And still say, you know what, we still got to press on towards a goal, towards a mark. What are we going to do? I think we will have stronger communities. I really do. I think there will be more transparency. Because I know where you're at, now you know where I'm at, and she knows where you're at. We have an understanding. This thing is about relationship. It's not about me trying to get my point across. It's not about trying to convince you that what I'm saying is right. And I just said that little joke a few minutes about Brother Feaster being wrong, but that's not what I'm just really playing about that. It's about the relationship that we have with each other. And what are we doing to work together? You got to be skeptical about cats that come together and sit down at the table and everything is about, yeah, I understand, mm-hmm, sure. Because what I know from sitting at some of those type of meetings, when jokers leave up out of there, they're talking about the same people they was just sitting down at the table with behind their back and won't say nothing to their face when they had an opportunity to sit down at the same table with them, whether it's in a church meeting, a nonprofit organization, a business cooperative. I've been a part of all of them. So hopefully, prayerfully, you will see this as a loving example of how we got to come together as communities. Hopefully you can take something away from what we've talked about tonight. Let me tell you where I think we're going to go next week. I believe truly in my heart that next week we're really going to get down to some more specifics about where the money is going. I don't know if we're going to talk about the individual responsibility or not. Go online, everybody. I'm going to try to post it. There's a song that I want everybody to listen to. It's called Are My Hands Clean by Sweet Honey and the Rock. And I'll post on the Facebook page, possessions.resources.finances. I'll go ahead and I'll post the YouTube clip of this group singing this song, because I think we'll be able to actually get there next week. So for those of you who this is your first time, please come back and join us next week, Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're listening to the PRF Table with Brother Dunlap, Sister Sanders, and Brother Feaster. So until next week, have a blessed and wonderful week. God bless you, and we love you.